We watch as our heroes take a much-needed and well-deserved rest in various places. Gibbs tucked into their bed at the orphanage, Vayu meditating in their room, and Holland sleeping on the cold stone floor of the forge. However, while our heroes rest, other pieces are still in motion. We find ourselves in the forest to the north of Ragan, overlooking the deep wound that Malachi's spear carved into the landscape. As we watch this scene, we hear the murmur of a one-sided conversation. It gets closer and closer, and finally we can understand what's being said. "I'm telling you, Indigo, they did much better than expected. They're all resting now besides LC, and only Pantheon knows where they've gone." This voice goes silent for a moment, and during their silence we see a figure stepping out of the forest, skirt hanging just above their ankles and the jingling of metal as golden bangles around their ankles strike one another. Stepping into the clearing we see Mella. They're holding one of their golden bangles in front of their face, silent and listening. "Yes, Indigo, I'm back at the scene. We're going to need a cleanup crew. Tell management to send Paolo's crew, and do ask them to grab Dacheron, would you? We're going to need transport on a large item." She pauses once again and stares at the center of this bangle. She nods. "All right, Indigo, I'll work on collection tomorrow. If the plan goes to fruition, I should have the assets in custody by tomorrow night. And we'll be on our way the following morning." Mella out. As we see Mella standing and putting away this bangle, our focus begins to fade until we only see darkness. Then suddenly there is only white light. We find ourselves standing next to a man seated in a chair with buttons on its armrest. This chair is at the top of a small flight of stairs, and has a lavish red rug traveling from underneath it down the stairs and further into this massive room. This room is pure white, the panels screaming of sterility and cleanliness. The lighting is harsh and overbearing, yet despite all of this, the man in the chair seems to fit perfectly here. He wears a white suit and has no ears, and these large yellow eyes stick out from his face. As he sits, he watches a fight from the perspective of a combatant. A single creature versus four. It's a fight we've already seen. A fight against a tiefling, a human, a genasi, and a gnome. He watches this fight multiple times, all the while a feverish smile is stretched painfully across his face. He reaches out a hand and presses one of the many buttons on his chair. "Alger, send the twins. I have a job for them." He takes his finger off the button and places his hands upon his lap, interlocking his fingers. He closes his eyes slowly and says, "It's time to go home."
So, we left the last session with you all splitting up and heading off to sleep. Or at least, saying that you were going to sleep. I don't know if all of you actually did. But we will pick it up with Vayu. Vayu, you were in the middle of a meditation when you came home and after you had spoken to the guards, and you begin to feel something around you. It's not like a physical presence, but it's more like you just sense it. You know, sometimes when you are standing in somewhere public and you just know someone's looking at you, it's that sort of feeling. You just know that there's something there. But it's familiar to you. It's so familiar to you. Vayu, I have a question for you. When was the first time you were truly in awe of the elements?
So there was definitely a time when they were young, like 5 or 6, where just the biggest storm that had hit at the like synth that they could remember hit the monastery. Do you get hurricanes in the mountains? Probably not. But just like something like that. Just lots of wind, lots of rain, lots of thunder. And everyone around them was like, we need to just get inside, stay inside, we'll be safe there. But Vayu just had the urge to go outside and just kind of live in it. They just felt that, like, that was where they needed to be. They didn't understand why everyone else wanted to stay inside when they felt so strongly that outside is where they wanted to be.
So as you feel this presence behind you, this sort of someone staring at you, this memory floods back to you, this memory of this storm. And now that you're seeing it, you remember something that you as a 5 or 6-year-old forgot, something you just sort of pushed away to the side. This presence brings back this memory, but more powerful, more true to what actually happened. Because Vayu, you've always been able to hear the Song of Storms, this singing that happens, this vocalized sound, but this was the first time that you could understand them. And now you can hear it. You hear the song of this woman. You see, you can hear her singing. She's singing about lightning. She's singing about crossing the sky and the explosions that happen and traveling the world. And you can hear it, and you are back in this memory. You are standing out in the field as rain falls upon you, and you can hear her song. What do you want to do?
I just kind of stand there. I think Vayu wasn't really learning how... what am I trying to say? I wasn't really, like, learning any martial arts or anything yet. So it's not like they were training. But I think this is kind of the start of that habit, where they just kind of stand outside with this going on around them and just like feel the energy and just kind of like feed off of the energy, and they're loving it. They love this.
You are standing in this field and you're just feeling the rain against you, and then something strange happens. There is a bolt of lightning that strikes down far into the tree line in front of you. But instead of vanishing, it stays there. It doesn't move. It just stays. This line connecting the ground to the sky stays present. And you can hear this singing, this woman calling out. What do you want to do?
Vayu looks at it and goes like, awesome! And just sprints towards that. Just takes off running.
Roll me dexterity check.
Oh, funny thing about monks is that I'm good at that.
Don't jinx yourself.
That's an 18.
Alright. Okay, so as you start running and sprinting out towards the forest, you feel two hands come and grab you and pull you back. And you feel your mother behind you, and she says, "Vayu, please, don't go out there. It's not safe. It's not your time yet. She's not here for you." And as Sachi says this, you watch as another monk of the temple begins to walk forward towards the forest and approaches where this lightning is. But you, Vayu, are picked up by your mother and quickly ushered back into your house. As you feel this memory begin to fade, you feel this presence with you. And you begin to realize what it is. It's not a presence in your mind, it's something outside. And you leave your meditative state, and you can hear her. It's that same voice you heard so many years ago, singing, calling to you. What do you want to do?
I get up, I bolt. Not, get it? Lightning bolt. anyway. Yeah, Vayu just gets up quickly, very quickly. I don't think they were meditating. I don't think they took off their clothes from the day or anything really. Yeah. So I think they're still ready, and they just grab their staff and just go. They go quietly. They don't want their family to know that they're leaving, I think. But they go.
You burst out of your front door. Well, not burst, stealthily burst out of your front door.
Stealthily.
And you begin to realize that it's raining. For the first time ever, the rain seems to have snuck up upon you because of the meditation you were in, but you can hear her singing. You can hear her song. She's calling to you. Or at least that's what it feels like. You can see the lightning is a little outside the city limits, but it's not too far. You aren't seeing the same bolt that you saw before, the one that stayed connected, but you can see the lightning's not too far from here. What do you want to do?
Run. Run right. Towards it. Vayu's excited.
All right. You begin sprinting out of the village and heading towards the north. And when you leave the village, that's when it happens. A bolt of lightning bigger than anything you've ever seen before flies out of the sky and strikes the ground. But it doesn't disappear. It just stays there. And doesn't move, and this voice is louder now. You can hear her song. She's not calling to you, but she's singing about the joys of traveling, the joys of moving so quickly that nothing can touch you. She sings to you, Vayu. Do you go to her?
Yes, definitely.
All right. You run into the forest, pushing through past trees, and picking yourself up when you trip, and just sprint towards where this voice is coming from. As you approach the edge of a clearing, you can see a figure standing inside of this lightning. It seems to be a woman, but it's made completely of light. The energy crackles around her, and you can hear her voice. It's quieter now, strangely, the closer that you are to her. But she's just singing and standing in this clearing. She's quite tall, but the way she moves is so graceful. What do you want to do?
Can I touch her? Well, I just want to reach out.
She's in the very center of this clearing, whereas you were still in the tree line. She's about 15 or 20 feet away from you. You could approach her if you wish and try and touch her.
That sounds like a good start, yes.
Are you going to be doing this stealthily, or are you just sprinting in?
Okay, I should clarify. I'm not sprinting anymore. I think now that I'm at this clearing, I think I'm just gonna, walk slowly up to her. Just kind of slowly. And, in awe, just kind of, taking in the scene.
Roll stealth for me.
Okay. That's a 20, not nat.
Okay. So you begin to approach this creature, this woman of lightning, as she stands there in this clearing, and you get very, very close to her, and she doesn't seem to notice you. She's just sort of singing and standing and swaying back and forth. And you reach out your hand to touch her.
And then I take 40 damage and die.
You are going to take 3 lightning damage from that. Okay, as your hand touches her form, you feel your hand gets struck by lightning, basically. And she jumps back away from you and turns and says, "Oh, it's just you. I'm glad to see you, Vayu."
Yeah. Hi.
Were you not informed of what today would be?
Did I miss something?
Clearly you missed something very important, but it is all right. I am here to tell you and teach you and educate you. My name is Galvana, child of lightning, spirit of storms. I am here to be your trainer in the elemental abilities that you will unlock.
Oh. Well, took you a while, but I'm glad you're here. I thought that I was just terrible at being a monk, but it's good to know that I just had to wait for someone to show up. So nice to finally meet you.
Well, just to point out, I'm not technically late. You're not 18 yet, so I'm technically early, but I figured what with all the things that are going on and what the Pantheon has been talking about that I should probably show up sooner rather than later. So are you ready?
Ready?
Yes. For training. And she pulls a hand back and fires a lightning bolt at you. I need you to roll me a dexterity saving throw.
Oh my god.
I love her.
That's a 14.
Okay. So she fires lightning bolt at you, and your eyes go wide, and you dive out of the way, and she goes, "Good, good, keep it up," and fires another one at you. Roll me another dexterity saving throw.
Also a 14.
Okay, you dodge it again, and she says, perhaps we should try something else, maybe, and she fires another lightning bolt at you.
Just roll again?
Yep, just roll again.
Oh god. That one was a 15!
Okay, you dodge again. Well, that was wonderful. Good first steps. Good first steps. Truly, truly, truly. Clearly, from the way that you move, you are meant to move with air, with grace. And she does these little back and forth hand motions like she's pretending to be the wind. And she looks at you and says, "I'm going to teach you that. Now, what other affinities might you have? Let's see. Okay." And she holds up her hand, and another lightning bolt comes down, but this time right next to you, and it strikes the ground and basically begins to create a fire on the ground. "Okay, let's see what you do with this." And she looks at the ground and points towards it.
What do you mean?
Well, there's fire, and there's you. What would you like to do?
What am I... God, I don't know. Vi's, like, going... Vi's shook. Okay. I'm from a monastery of elemental monks. I've seen people do this. So I just kind of do like a, not confidently, but I just do like some kind of like gesture of like, yeah, I can totally like do this. Just like hoping that something will happen.
So as you do this gesture, is it like very twirly? Is it like very sturdy? What is this movement like?
I think it's like a good... I make hand motions are not helpful on a podcast. I think it's like a good kind of like twirly. Like imagine like a firebender kind of thing. But not the punchy ones. The twirly ones.
The Uncle Iroh ones.
Oh yeah.
My God.
So you spin and you sort of move your hands with it. And as you turn around and eventually look back at this fire, you can see that it's actually spread further out to one side.
Oh,
and
good.
Delvana looks at you and says, so you do have an affiliation for fire, but it seems that you are not quite sure what to do yet. I think you should really try and set that out before we burn the forest down. Would that be good?
Yeah, that's a great idea, but I don't know how.
Try again. Just try again. Calm. Be calm. It's okay. Just try again.
What are you... Okay, I take my hands up, and I just kind of, like, push them in, like, a downward motion. Like, maybe I can pat it out.
So this time, as you throw your hands up and slam it downwards, you watch as it's almost like a sheet of wind appears and just smothers the fire. And it dies out. And Galvana claps her hands, and every time her hands touch, there's like a little small thunder sound. And she looks at you and says, good, 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 good. You did so well. Now let's try this again. And another lightning bolt flies out.
Dexter.
Yep.
Oh, God. Oh, that was only an 8.
So you are hit with a lightning bolt. It's not like a full lightning bolt spell, but a special thing. You are going to take 5 damage.
Okay.
Are you knocked unconscious?
I'm at... Wait. Okay. Yeah, I'm still up.
Okay. So, the night sort of continues like this. Galvana keeps you on your feet for a long time. She doesn't really answer any questions. She just sort of seems to invoke a policy of training by doing. She's the sort of person. She's the sort of elemental who would throw you into a pool to make you swim. And so you guys sort of go at that for a while. By the time she leaves, it is getting closer to the morning, and you are exhausted. Galvana doesn't even leave with any sort of big pomp and circumstance. She just merely says, okay, I will see you for our next training session. Bye-bye, Vayu! And then the lightning bolt disappears.
Vayu is shook. They're shocked. They're tired. Shocked, because of lightning. They're exhausted, but they're also just very, very excited that they did stuff. They're very happy with that, at least. And they really want to go home and tell their mom about it, but they also really want to lay down on the earth in the forest and sleep right then and there. So...
They're gonna go to sleep right there.
Actually, yeah. Vayu's just gonna take a power nap. It's just a power nap. At least that's what they're planning to do. They don't want to ditch their court date. I'll say that.
All right.
But they're just gonna lay down.
So that's where we'll end this scene. With Galvana leaving and you just looking up at the clouds, exhausted, and just finding a tree nearby. And going to sleep amidst all these little burn marks in this field.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All right. So now we are going to cut over to Gibbs. Gibbs, last time we spoke, you were heading to bed. Did you go to bed? Or have you been up for a while?
No, I think Gibbs definitely actually went to bed this time. And like normally they would wake up early, crawl under the bed, tinker a little bit. But I think just... because of how much happened the day before, like, they were actually sleeping.
Mm-hmm. So, when morning comes, you wake slowly. You wake up a little bit before dawn, and you find yourself in your room. You look around, and you can see that your roommates are there, except Rhea is not. You know that Rhea wasn't feeling great last night, and so Evie basically... let her sleep in her bed just to keep her calm and keep her happy. What would you like to do?
Gibbs will probably, like, look over the orb again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're expecting, but I don't know. Assuming that nothing has changed. What time does the library normally open?
Library normally opens around 8 a.m. or so. You know that
so not for
Miss Ethel
hours.
Goes there early to do things. Not for a couple hours, no.
Yeah, okay. Then Gibbs would wander downstairs, see if there's anyone awake, see if there's any food.
No. It seems like everyone's pretty much asleep. You know that normally people don't really wake up around here until sunrise. You know that Evie especially wakes up right at sunrise, does all the things she needs to do in the morning, then wakes up everyone else.
Alright. Then Gibbs, I think, like, kind of, like, rubs their eyes, still tired, still sleepy, and decides to go to the Heart and Earth?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's yeah, to, you know, check in on Holland and Malachi before everything that needs to be done that day.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, Gibbs would gather their stuff in, like, their bag and go there. Because, like, that way they can still work on their stuff but still check in on Holland and Malachi before everything.
So you head to the Heart and Hearth. You get there. It's still very early. But the door still seems to be unlocked from last night.
Holland is sleeping against it.
Mm-hmm.
Alright. Then Gibbs will try to open the door, ultimately fail, and then start knocking.
Alright. So, Holland, you wake to the sound of knocking.
He's just gonna, like, groggily scoot off to the side and, like, open the door and be like, I know I have a lot of explaining to do. Just give me a minute to wake up. It's been a long day.
That's okay. And Gibbs just stands there and waits.
Oh, okay. Come on in, Ghibli. And he shut the door and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go back to sleep now.
Oh. Okay, that's fine.
So you enter the Heart and Hearth, and Holland goes right back to sleep. And you can see that Malachi is still sleeping on his little pillow that he was given. He seems knocked right out. What do you want to do?
Well, again, seeing the two of them asleep, Gibbs will kind of plop down, by the two of them, kind of, like, glance over at Malachi, kind of studying, like, the, what was it, gold marks, all over him. Do they stay still, or did they move at all since yesterday?
They moved from, it used to be at his elbow, then it went all the way up to his chest, and it's now covering his upper body.
Yeah, I mean, like, besides that. Like, it hasn't moved since then? Okay.
Hasn't moved since then.
Hmm. Okay. Then Gibbs would, you know, take their bag with all their stuff in it, start taking things out, like, laying them in front of them, you know, the red orb, their normal music box, and then their special, I guess it's not technically a music box, but, like, the special music box. And, you know, they're gonna press their thumb against that, open it up, and then pull out their gun and start tinkering. Because the thing is, like, the one thing that they have been thinking about a lot lately is how, like, every time they shoot it, it makes, like, that weird, like, banging noise, which, and, like, the puff of smoke and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gibbs was trying to stop that to see, like, why it was making that noise.
All right. So as you begin to tinker with this gun and you begin to work with this thunder cannon, I have a question for you.
Ask what was DM.
What was the first thing that Gibbs ever made?
Well, you remember those little robots that Gibbs works on underneath their bed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, believe it or not, Gibbs started making little robots from a very young age.
They are a very young
age. I know. You know, back when they were a kid. No, so the very first thing Gibbs made was a toy robot. All messed up and funky looking.
Alright, so as you're working on this gun, you feel this memory of the first thing you made. And we're back in that scene. We see you outside of your home with these tinker tools, building this little robot. Why are you building it?
Well, that is another excellent question. You see, it's been a rough couple of days in the Stern household because Gibbs has realized that their father really hasn't been feeling well. You know, that he's kind of sick. And so Gibbs decided to make him something. Gibbs decided to make him something to see if it could make him feel better.
Alright, so you work on this for a long time, this little robot, and eventually you decide that it's done. What do you do?
Well, Gibbs, first of all, is immensely proud of theirself. Even though it's, like, hilarious, where you look at this thing and it doesn't even really look like a robot. It's just a bunch of weirdly shaped metals put together, and there's, like, a vague head shape and, like, little stubs that could be, like, limbs. And, you know, like, those, like, grease pencil marker mm-hmm. things? Those totally would exist, right?
Yes. Yes.
There would be a face drawn on the head with, like, a little grease marker. And so, yeah, Gibbs is, like, really excited about this. And has a moment where they think that they want to keep it for themselves, and then shakes their head and says, nope, they want to go give it to their father immediately. And so they kind of, like, stand up and scamper into the house.
So you scamper into this house that you share with a few other families, and you go to the room that you know is your parents' room. You know your mother's currently out getting groceries, but your father has been in here for a long time. At this point, it's been almost a week that he's been in bed. And you open the door easily, and you can see his shape in this bed, just sort of laying there. There's no movement or anything. He just seems very still. But you see him tense up slightly when you enter the room, and you know that he's definitely not asleep.
Okay. So, Gibbs is kind of oblivious to, you know, the state that their father is in. Not realizing that it's probably not a great idea to be bugging him right now. But regardless, Gibbs runs up to him and says, Papa, look, I made you a thing, look at it, it's so cool. And kind of, like, tugs on the blankets.
You pull the blankets down, and you can see your father's face, and he seems very tired. But as soon as he hears your voice, his entire demeanor changes slightly. He seems more relaxed, more relieved, and he looks at you and says, come here, Gibbs. Let me see what you have. And he reaches down to pick you up and place you onto the bed, sort of sitting up in the bed slightly to look at you.
And Gibbs just, like, holds out the little robot like inches from his father's face and is just waiting for a reaction.
So he picks you up and puts you on his lap, and you basically shove this robot into his face, and you can see his eyes sort of cross for a second to look at it, and then he pulls back away from you, and a smile breaks across his face, and he says, did you sneak into our toolbox again?
No.
Hmm.
No, definitely not, because you said I wasn't allowed to do that, and so I didn't.
Now, if you didn't sneak into our toolbox, then I believe you, but what is this? Who is this for?
Oh, it's for you! I made you a friend, so you wouldn't be in here all alone.
You see a smile cross your father's face. It's, you probably didn't notice at the time, but it was definitely half-hearted. It was appreciative, but not a real smile. And he picked it up from you and said, thank you, Gibbs. I appreciate it. I appreciate you making this. And he looks at it and holds it in his hands. And you see tears begin to fall down his face, slowly. And he says, I love you, kiddo.
Well, I love you too.
And I want Gibbs to kind of, like, reach out and, like, place their hand on their dad's cheek, like, where a tear is.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of, like, wipe it away.
And he looks at you and says, kiddo, sometimes I get sad. I get very sad. And it's very hard for me to feel happy. And I'm sorry. I know it's not something you asked for, but it's something that I have to deal with. But having you here, I want you to know that you are the greatest gift I've ever received. And what you've made makes me so happy. I want to do right by you, kiddo.
Okay.
And this time, a genuine smile breaks across his face, and he ruffles your hair, and kisses you on the forehead, and takes the robot from you and says, why don't you go run along and play?
Well, what if you come with me? Because then maybe if we play, you'll feel better.
He places a hand on your shoulder and says, not yet, kiddo. I'm sorry, but soon. Hopefully soon.
Okay, okay, should I make another one? Will that help?
You know, I don't think your mother's gonna appreciate having one new guest in our bed. I don't think a second would make it better.
Oh, okay. Is there anything else I can do? I think I know how to make tea. I think Emily will let me borrow her kettle. So I can definitely, you just have to, like, heat the water up, right? I can do that.
How about this? You get Emily, ask her to help you make tea, and then you can come back and spend some time with me. Is that alright?
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
And so, you head out of the room and have Emily help you make tea. This little robot that you gave to your father became incredibly important to him. You know that once he finally got out of bed, which was a few days later, he started carrying it with him everywhere. When he would work, he would place it on the tinker's bench in front of him so he could always have something to look at. And on the days that were the hardest, he always had them next to his bedside. You also know that he made sure to take this on the journey with him. Gibbs, as you feel this memory pass over you, you see yourself looking at your gun. How do you feel?
So Gibbs is kind of stuck, like, in this memory. Like, they kind of, like, pause their work as it kind of, like, ran through their head. And they think that they understand a little more. And they kind of, like, look at their gun with a new perspective. And they realize, like, this thing that they thought was sort of wrong with the gun that had to be fixed is actually something that can be worked with, and that Gibbs shouldn't try to get rid of it, but work with it, you know? And so Gibbs decides to see what they can do with that banging and smoking aspect of the gun.
All right. So I think that's where we leave that scene with you working so intently, not to remove something with this gun, but to make it stronger, to use that not as a bug, but as a feature. And that's where we leave this scene with you. So Holland, you wake up to the sound of this banging, of this loud, not super loud, but quite loud poof of air and stuff. And when you open your eyes, you can see that Gibbs is standing on a stool at a workbench working on their gun. You can still see that Malachi is quietly asleep. What would you like to do?
Holland's gonna stagger to his feet and walk over to Gibbs and, like, lean down the workbench next to him with his hand
next
and his was next. Sorry, I keep doing that.
Continue.
All right. So Holland leans down next to Gibbs, just like face in hand. So, what you up to?
Holland, I just came up with the best idea ever. Okay, so you know when I shot my gun, you know, yesterday, how it made like that weird, like, unusually loud banging noise, and then it had all the smoke and everything, and it looked like it was broken, but it actually wasn't. You know that? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So, I decided that instead of trying to get rid of it, what if I make it louder?
Sounds good.
Yeah! That's what I thought.
You do that, Gibbs.
Can you hand me that hammer over there?
Yes. Please be careful, and, can we try to keep it down a little bit because our new friend over there is still asleep.
Oh, did he not wake up yet? I thought for sure that last shot would.
See, I did too, but still, he's still asleep. So, let's just try. I think he's had a rough day, and I think you and I can just help him. Let's just not.
I'll be very quiet.
Small explosions.
Small explosions.
All right. So Holland's just gonna let them work, and he's just gonna look around and just he still has that sense of urgency to like go and check up on Fleur and to go and check up on Quinn and to do all these things that he's used to doing. He wants just to go and be with them, but he can't still because Malachi's here and now Gibbs is here, and Holland feels very responsible for both of them. So, I feel like, in a sense, in order to maintain some level of normalcy and to, like, just, like, to ground himself, he's gonna try to, like, create, like, a makeshift altar in the forge. So he's just gonna look around for, like, a bowl? Mm-hmm. Like, a large, like, bowl and just set that, like, on, like, the side of, like, the forge itself. So, like, the forge is, like, a giant furnace and there's, like, a brick basin that protrudes from the wall where you can like work in and has the anvil on it. So like the anvil's in the center and he's just gonna move to the side and like put this bowl on the side and like grab some charcoals from the forge itself. They're like cooled down at this point. They're not like still hot, something like that. So there's like cool down charcoals and put them in the bowl, and he's gonna try to light that for his god forge.
So you hold out your hand and you do what you do every day. You basically snap your fingers to summon a flame, but when you snap your fingers this time, nothing happens. There's no flame, there's no sparks, there's nothing.
That takes him aback. He'll try again, snap his fingers again.
Once again, nothing happens.
He'll sit on the edge of the forge next to the bowl and just, he'll try it one more time, just snap his fingers again.
You snap your fingers one final time, but once again, it just doesn't seem to work. It's like whatever you used to do, it's just not working. It just refuses to happen.
In his head, he's never, like, spoken to Forge directly. He doesn't, like, have that kind of relationship. It's not, like, a ask for something and, like, look for guidance type thing. It's just kind of, like, a mutual respect. Or a respect, not mutual respect. He doesn't know how Forge feels. He hasn't asked. So Holland just, like, takes him and he's like, all right. We're switching it up, I guess. And he sits there because he doesn't know what to do in this situation because he's never had this happen. He like since he's had this power to create this fire, he's never had it like taken away or like falter. So he takes out the pouch that he from yesterday where he put the dust, and he takes a little bit out and like sprinkles it on top of the charcoals in the bowl. And he, like, places his hand over the bowl and mutters, worship one, worship all.
I have a question for you, Holland. When was the first time you felt the presence of a god?
Holland first felt the presence of a god when he was in the barracks with Ulrich, working at the forge there. He was probably 17, 18 at the time. Still very new to the outside world and new to people being nice to him. And Ulrich has been trying to train him for some time now, like probably like a year or so. And Holland just wasn't getting the craft of blacksmithing. And he'd be working at the forge with Ulrich, forging a sword for the soldiers.
So you feel this memory take over you. You feel this memory of you being in the forge with Ulrich, your teacher, the one who taught you the dwarven ways, the one who showed you how to truly craft a blade. But you're bad at it, of course. You're terrible at it. And as you are crafting this blade, you accidentally grab the wrong part, and it cuts open the glove that you're using slightly and touches your skin and burns you. And you can feel that burn and you pull away. And Ulrich, standing behind you, grabs onto your shoulder and says, "Feel it, child. Pay attention to the pain. Know that pain. That is the pain of the forge. That is the pain of being a workman."
Okay.
And he pulls away from you and walks to the other side and looks at you and says, "Close your eyes."
Close my eyes?
Close your eyes.
Okay. He closes his eyes.
And you hear Ulrich's voice. "Focus. Focus on the pain that you feel right now from your hand."
I'm focusing. Now what?
"You feel that pain? That is the presence of two gods, earth and fire, as forge. Hear them." And in that moment, it's as if the pain fades away. In an instant, it disappears, and instead you hear the clanging of metal. You hear the sound of 1,000 forges ringing behind you, and that sound disappears. And now you hear the sound of something bubbling slowly. You can feel the heat around you. What do you want to do?
As soon as he doesn't feel the pain anymore, he's going to open his eyes and look at his hand like, "What?"
The second you open your eyes, the pain returns. And you can feel it again. And Ulrich looks at you and says, "What did I tell you? I said to focus. Focus on the pain."
It went away. I thought I did it. Was that not it?
Again.
Okay. He closes his eyes again. And starts to focus this time.
The pain disappears. And you hear the clanging of forges. Then you feel the heat. And hear something bubbling slowly. What do you want to do?
He's gonna, very hesitantly, put his hand back on the blade and try to work with his eyes closed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You try working with your eyes closed, and instead of hearing a clanging sound, you hear the bubbling. You raise your hand and you strike it down against this blade, and every time you do, you hear that same clang, not the clang, you hear the same bubbling sound over and over again. And it's just this warmth. This heat doesn't burn you. It doesn't set you on fire. It's just warm and it's there. And eventually you hear Ulrich's voice again. "Open your eyes, boy. Look at what you did."
He slowly opens his eyes, like one at a time, like, "But I'm focusing."
And you look down and you can see that this crappy blade is now what could be considered a real blade. It's forged very well. It's not as great as Ulrich's pieces, but it's better than you've ever made it before. And the pain is gone too.
Is this good?
It's better than what you were doing before. And look at your hand.
He looks at his hand.
Your wound is gone.
What happened to it?
You paid attention to a god, and they paid attention back to you. To be a true blacksmith, you must know the burn and the bite of earth and fire. To truly be a blacksmith, you must know the forge. You must know magma.
Do you talk to them?
I do not talk to them, but I know them. I know that they are there every time I make a blade. Every time I make a single weapon, a nail, anything, they're there with me. Now get back to work.
I don't need to. Okay. Yeah, okay, yes. Okay. And he starts going back to work.
And as you feel this scene pull away from you, this memory disappear, you begin to hear something. You hear the clanging of a forge, and it doubles, and it triples, and it quadruples, and it gets louder and louder until it's deafening, and then it disappears. And then there's the sound of quiet bubbling. What do you want to do?
I open my eyes.
You open your eyes and you can see the volcano. You can see the magma inside of it, and you can hear how it's bubbling and the sounds that are also that surround you. But you also hear a voice. You know, most people give me an offering when they try to cast this spell.
Who is speaking?
Who do you think? Your god, of course. You call me Forge, other people call me Magma. Whatever works, I guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to give you an offering of what?
Well, normally for this spell, it's a ruby of some sort, but as far as I know, I don't think you have one.
No, I don't. I'll try to get one.
Do you know what spell you were trying to cast?
No, not particularly.
Holland, you feel a shift in the world around you. It's as if suddenly there are many eyes staring at you, but you can't see them. You can just sort of, it's the feeling you get when you're in a crowd and someone's staring at you. And you hear Forge say, "What spell do you think you were casting?"
I just was trying to light the flame.
No, you might have thought you were lighting a flame, but that's not what you felt. That's not what you wanted.
I don't know what I wanted. And, I just was trying to do something for you, I guess.
They laugh slightly and you can't see Forge anywhere around you, but you can feel them. And you can tell that they're taking a certain amount of enjoyment out of this conversation. Well, you want to do something for me? Why do you have to light this fire with my power, then? Using my own power to light things on fire for me.
That's what I was taught to do. I thought that was what you wanted me to do.
What you've been taught and what I want are very different things. Well, you never really thought to ask me, though.
Then what do you want?
I want someone who listens. Someone who hears me. I don't need someone who just obeys without a question, but someone who speaks to me. I have plenty of clerics who are willing to do whatever I say on a whim, but no one who really listens.
Do you want a friend?
I guess that's what your people would call it.
Okay. So if you want me to listen, then go ahead and speak.
Holland, you're about to go on a journey that no one else has. The things you're about to face and the things you're going to see, they're going to be difficult. But I need you to understand that we're here for you, all of us. You may only listen to or worship me, but as you know, worship one, worship all. You're connected to me, but through me are also connected to the rest of the Pantheon. I want you to have something that you haven't had for a lot of your life. I want you to have faith. Not only in us, but in those around you, in the people who are a part of your life. I want you to find people who can you can trust, even when you aren't sure about it.
I think I understand.
Also, stop using my power to light things on fire for me, because it's kind of like paying your friend back with the money that you borrowed. It doesn't really... It's weird. Just, like, learn how to use, a flint and tinder or something. Like, please.
Okay. That seems... Like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I'm sorry about that. I didn't know any better.
Holland, do you feel something on your chest for a moment? It's not like a punch or anything, but it's like a gentle touch. And this vision begins to fade away, and as it does, you hear Forge's voice one last time. This time I'll make an exception. But only this time. Next time you owe me a ruby.
I will find a ruby.
And your vision fades away. You can hear the sounds of Malachi sleeping and of Gibbs still working. And you instantly know that you are back in the Heart and Hearth. What do you want to do?
Is the bowl lit?
The bowl is in front of you with the dust that you had put on top of the charcoal. But there is no fire in there.
I will try to find flint and whatever else goes with flint to make fire. Because I don't know, and neither does Holland.
Okay. Can you roll me a survival check?
That's a 15.
So you go and grab a flint, and despite what Forge had said about a flint and tinder, you think that what they really meant was a flint and steel. So you grab some flint and you grab some steel.
And they don't know either. What is this? They don't even know.
Hey, listen. Forge is made of magma. They've never had to light a fire before.
And they're complaining at me for it. I hate them.
So you go ahead. And you start smashing the flint and steel together, and sparks fly off and land into the bowl, and the flame erupts. But you get the sense that there's something more you can do with this flame.
The only logical thing to do is put my hand in it.
Did you say put your hand in it?
Yes, that's the only logical thing to do.
What is with this group and just sticking their hands into things?
I blame Ollie.
I mean, technically it's your fault. You're the one who touched the egg and took fire damage. But yes. You put your hand into the flame and it's hot and you can feel it burning you. But then you focus for a second on that pain, exactly how Ulrich taught you. And you begin to feel this magic flowing out of you. And suddenly the fire isn't hot anymore. It doesn't burn. It just is there. It provides light, but no pain, no hurt. And as you're doing this, you watch as the dust that you had placed onto this fire begins to rise slowly out of the bowl and turn bright red and enter the fire, making it grow even larger. But it doesn't jump out of the bowl. Good.
And he just, like, pats the bowl. Thank you. I guess I'll find a ruby. And I'll make sure to listen more.
And I think that's where we'll end the episode. With Gibbs working on some items. Working on their gun. With Vayu asleep in the middle of a forest, and with Holland talking to a flaming bowl.
That's an aesthetic I can get behind.
Hi, you wonderful people. I'm Russ, and I'm the DM of Prism Pals. We wanted to thank you all for downloading and listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoyed seeing how our characters' past are affecting their present. If you did enjoy this episode, please continue to download and listen to our future episodes. To catch up on the shenanigans that me and the rest of the cast are pulling, follow us on Twitter, at Prism Pals. We would also like to thank Neil Martin for his wonderful work on our opening music, Hope on the Horizon. If you enjoy that, you can find him and more of his music and other work on Twitter. In addition to Neil, we have other artists to talk about in this week's very own Artist Spotlight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Artist Spotlight with your host, Sam Miller. So are you like me? Do you have a million and one OCs? Do you love learning about other people's OCs? Well then, oh boy, do I have an artist for you. His name is Morgan, and he is, in his own words, an artist with a love for creating characters and stories. He creates D&D characters in his free time, as well as other character creations, including full alien species. So I took a gander at Morgan's art, and I fell in love with his style. Sometimes he does pieces with this colorful line art, that kind of reminds me of like a woodblock print, and it also reminded me of like a hybrid of classic and modern art techniques. And I especially fell in love with the art of his OC Amusement. So you should check it out on his Instagram at Kishiba. And also on his Twitter at IRL Shoyohina. Yes, I pronounced those both correctly, so check it out in the episode description in case you didn't understand what I was saying. But yes, reach out to him, talk about OCs. He's also open to commission, so ask about those as well. Alright, that's all I have for you. I hope you enjoyed this segment of Artist Spotlight with your host, Sam Miller. Peace out.
Thank you, Sam. So, one last thing before you go. Don't forget to leave us reviews on iTunes, and remember to share us with all your friends. But seriously, about the reviews on iTunes, I check them like every day, and I love seeing them, and just like, fill my dead heart with joy, please. Ugh, thank you. I've tried to record this outro like 17 times, and this is the best take so far. So this is what you're getting.